Well, good evening. This is a session on need and power in healthcare. I'm Don Russo, and we've been looking at healthcare this week in a series of sessions to examine some of the values that drive healthcare today. We're not talking so much about the science, the clinical science of medicine, but some of the other factors that seem to push and pull in American medicine, American healthcare, and what makes it move and where is it going. So this session, we're going to look at a couple of factors, need and power. I'm Don Russo. I'm the host of these. I work in a hospital in Oregon. I teach at a college right next door to the hospital. It's in a small town, rural part of the state. But I'd suggest that healthcare is healthcare from East Coast to West Coast, from big towns and small towns. There are similarities that drive healthcare in a uniquely American way. And that's what we ask you to consider tonight. Look at the questions of healthcare in terms of need and power. So if we think about need, we've done this at some of the other sessions, I'd ask you to just think about a time when you needed help, medical help, you needed some help. We say healthcare comes in when there's something there that you just can't do on your own. You can't take care of on your own. Maybe your mom took care of a lot of things when you were little. But for healthcare as a big system, we say it's something beyond what we can do for ourselves. That's the healthcare system. So think of a time when you needed help beyond your own means to care for yourself. And then I ask you to think of who had power in that situation. What kind of power happened there? Where did the power come from? Where did the need come from? And we really need you to share some things with us tonight to see if we can look into these issues. So who would say something about their own need, an experience you had where you needed health care? Anybody? Something came to mind right away for everyone of that.
Well, I will. How gory do you want to get? Really gory?
As much as you want to share.
There was a time when I discovered I had kidney cancer, and I was in very severe need of medical help. But I don't think I had the power.
You don't think you had any?
No.
Now we want to look at that more.
But so you needed. I felt very powerless, as a matter of fact.
You felt powerless. What did you need?
I needed pain relief. That was all that I knew I needed because I didn't know what was wrong with me.
So the first sensation you had to tell you something was wrong was pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Severe pain.
Uh-huh.
And that brought you into the world of healthcare.
Yes, unfortunately.
I never got out.
I was like a trap.
Trapped. What happened in the world of healthcare?
What happened in the world?
To you.
Yeah. I had surgery. I had the kidney removed.
Surgery. Mm-hmm. Removal of the kidney.
Mm-hmm. Did you have chemotherapy afterwards?
Not in those days. I didn't have chemotherapy.
How long ago was this?
Oh, how old are you?
You would ask that question.
That was 46 years ago.
That's 46 years ago.
Oh my.
Because I was in utero.
Because she was, she was right.
You were pregnant with your daughter when this cancer was discovered?
Well, when it was discovered, but I had her first and then the kidney removed.
That's a big event in your life, huh?
Yes, it was.
Still is.
It's a dramatic time.
Yeah, this dramatic child.
But you've had 46 years of life.
Yes.
Because of the medical.
Actually, because of the pregnancy, because it brought on the kidney crisis of the kidney condition.
Wow, that's a big need. Yeah, a new baby.
Uh-huh.
life-threatening disease.
Mm-hmm.
And someone took care of you.
I'm only married about a year.
Married only a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you look back, where was the power in that situation? You said you felt powerless.
I did, and it was all sort of taken out of my hands. It was just sort of do this, do that, do that, and you know, that's what I did. I didn't have any. I wasn't given any alternatives or anything. I mean, maybe there were no alternatives. I don't know.
Now, who had power?
The physician.
The physician.
Yeah.
Why?
Maybe because I was very young, and I didn't really know what was happening.
Yeah, that's your side. What's your name? I'm sorry.
Dorothy.
Dorothy?
Dorothy Goldman.
Looking at Dorothy's situation, she says the physician had power. What gave the physician power?
Dorothy gave the physician power.
Dorothy, okay, how would you explain that? How did Dorothy?
By allowing the physician to have the power.
Well, the physician's expertise.
Yeah, it was the fact that he had the knowledge.
He had the knowledge.
Or the assumed knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you assume a physician is this omnipresent and all-powerful and never wrong.
Oh, definitely you did in our days.
Oh, even today. Even today, the doctor is always mm-hmm. right. And whatever the doctor says is right, and mm-hmm. and you don't question what he's going to do, how he's going to do it. You don't question how often to see him, what tests he does. You don't question the bill.
And he hardly ever shared any of those insights with me.
A lot of them don't even talk to you.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting two ways that in your situation, Dorothy, this physician had incredible power over your life.
Mm-hmm.
One was by the expertise, the knowledge he held that you didn't,
mm-hmm.
and the other was by a kind of an unquestioning turning over of decision making of mm-hmm. the role.
That was based on ignorance too. If I'd known anything about it, I might have. But I don't know what I would have done differently. There really were not many. Surgery was the only cure in those days. The chemotherapy wasn't even.
It's almost a mindset with the American public today, I think, to accept what they're. Doctor says as almost an empirical truth because it's coming from the doctor. And my doctor would never do anything wrong against me because my doctor is the best one that there is.
Well, I had two experiences of childbirth that were the opposite. Where I didn't have that attitude. One was a home birth where the doctor basically sat in the corner and ate peanut butter sandwiches and said encouraging words.
Oh, really?
Delivery was mostly managed by a midwife, and the doc was just, every now and then he'd sort of threaten me with Pitocin because I didn't want drugs, and he said with women who are highly motivated not to have drugs, if you threaten Pitocin, their uteruses start contracting. So he would sort of say, well, we might have to take a look at the Pitocin. He basically took no power, and I gave him no power. He was there in the unlikely event that his unique expertise was needed.
Interesting.
And then 13 years later, I had a second child where I chose to go into a hospital, still with the same attitude that I wasn't going to give up the power, expecting to have a doctor that I had a really good relationship with, having a birth plan all drawn up that said essentially that I wasn't giving up the power. And from the moment I set foot in there, I felt powerless. Ended up with a C-section, exactly the same pathway of the labor. One ended in a problem for home birth and one ended in a C-section.
How did you give up the power?
Everything about the experience was that the birth plan was like, oh yeah, well, so what was put aside. I lost control over being able to manage the pain. The doctor was not, my doctor wasn't available, and so another doctor was on call.
I was
going to
ask that question.
Yeah.
Was he there?
Yeah. My doctor was, you know, it was weekend, and my doctor wasn't available, and the doc who was there was sort of known as the fastest knife in the West in the surgical suite, and he did what he was really good at, which is he delivered a baby after, you know, I was in crisis. So sometimes it's that you've given up the power, and sometimes it's that, I worked in healthcare, I, you know, knew the hospital, I was very aggressive, I felt like, you know, if I had a lot of things on my side, knew a lot about the birth process, knew a lot about my own way of handling labor because it was my second time around and the problems that I had the first time came up the second time, and yet I completely felt powerless.
Yeah. Boy, the two of you have just covered the whole spectrum of these issues of needing power.
Right? One other section of power is second opinion. In your experience in Plymouth Falls, how often does not a physician requesting a second opinion, but how often does a patient in the hospital, once they find out that there is something that's going to happen that they don't know about or that they are questioning, how often do they request a second opinion?
Oh, I wouldn't know exactly, but some of the anecdotes and stories I've heard is that people will frequently ask for a second opinion.
Frequently.
But there's rarely a discrepancy in the two opinions given. They're often very close, maybe because the physicians in a small town are too close sometimes.
Well, a lot of insurance companies insist on second opinions now, too.
Or they make the option available at no charge for a second opinion.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're in a situation where you do have trust, and the trust may not be misplaced. You know, the person has expertise, they have your welfare in mind, they are well-intentioned, so on and so forth. But you still have a sense of powerlessness that may make the relationship work less well than it would if there was more power. Some of that, I think, is communication skills in any relationship. Sometimes it doesn't work as well because there are unresolved power issues because people don't know how to communicate with each other. And so lots of times I come away from visits with my physician and think, well, why didn't I ask her that? Or, you know, well, how come I just went, and didn't say, well, what makes you think that? And then I usually call her up and say, after I left, I thought about this stuff.
How about any others? Would anyone else want to share an experience of need?
I've had very good healthcare experiences, so I haven't felt like I have felt empowered. I've been a member of an HMO, and I've got along well with my physicians. I think when I wanted something, I was able to ask for it, and my deliveries were collegial and went well, so I haven't had a bad experience on that end of it. I guess working in healthcare as I do, my bigger concern gets to be when something seems necessary and the insurance company won't authorize it, or when I less of, I think many times physicians now have to call somebody in Oklahoma and get permission for something that they feel is in the best interest of the patient, and sometimes it isn't even. That's where the power is whoever is controlling the purse strings, or down the line further when businesses are deciding healthcare and are making decisions about which plan to go with, and can choose between one which requires empowerment on the part of people to stay well and healthy and take good care of themselves, or a major medical you know, then maybe that's a power or control.
Okay, good. Yeah, so we're covering, you're broadening it to look at power in a few different ways. Yeah. The first case here, both mom and daughter had physician medical power and preference there, but yours now bring up the financial power and the purse string, and you work in healthcare too?
Yeah, as a therapist, so it's a mental health.
Mental health.
Yeah.
And you've seen that power of the purse string.
Sure. This person doesn't need any more sessions, or this person doesn't need, they're not suicidal enough. We can't put them in the hospital, those kind of issues.
Now, Paul has been adding that perspective. He has worked in that, on that insurance side, and he all week has been bringing that part, you know, from his perspective to these discussions. And that's certainly a factor that we wanted to, it's on the minds of virtually everybody in America today, is the cost of care, and why does it have to cost so much, and yet who's deciding about when it's needed and not.
I think, though, when you're in crisis, if you're pinned under a car, you don't ask which towing company is better or will give the best service or something. You just want, you know, want something done. So I don't think that it is a question of giving up power or having it taken away from you or good or bad care or something. It's just to do something.
Yeah, need forces response.
You know, you're not in a rational position to make decisions, and even the physician isn't in a position to, he has to make snap decisions.
You question a $100 repair job on your automobile much more than you question a $15,000 operation on your child.
Or
yourself.
Yeah.
What is the, why are you doing this to my car? Well, is there something else that can be done? How long is this going to be good for? Do you guarantee it?
We even get the little broken parts.
You get the broken parts back.
We'll pay you.
And you pick your mechanic much better, because, you know, there are mechanics out there that are not honest.
I feel very powerless in those relationships too, frankly.
I will say my mother asked for her gallstones.
Did she?
So she got her parts back.
Well, she got her parts back.
You don't have a real personal relationship with your mechanic, though, like you do your doctor.
Oh, I have a better relationship with my mechanic than I have with my
doctor.
I want to stand over and watch what he does, so next time I don't have to take it to him, I can do it.
You can do it.
I don't have that feeling with my doctor.
No.
However, I'll tell you, lighten it up a little bit. I have a personal problem. I've felt I've been overweight for a long time, and then I decided it was a height problem. I went to Height Watchers, and that didn't help. I went to Height Anonymous, that didn't help. I've taken height stretching exercises, that didn't help. Finally, my doctor told me that height is hereditary. Now, both of my parents are dead, so I blame them. It works.
It was also the fluffy fear.
Fluffy?
Yeah, you're not fat, you're just fluffy.
Just tell me about that.
How about power from any other perspectives? How else do we look at power in matters of healthcare today?
You mean another perspective, or just a different experience? As my most recent was in wanting to take another look at hormone replacement therapy.
Okay.
Going to more of a natural healing model, having... Well, you're from Klamath Falls,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Having had some drastic changes to my health as a result of my son and daughter-in-law introducing me to the health benefits they have from super blue green algae and cell tech. And that caused me to think a lot more about the whole aspect of the medical model and the natural healing model, and read books by John Robbins that made me think I wanted to get at least what to me was a more natural hormone replacement therapy. Now I wish I'd never, my physician at the time when he put me on the Prevnar, wished I had thought more through it, because what it did was delay the usual menopausal hot flashes and so on, and when I ever go off it, then they'd come right back with a vengeance, kind of thing. Anyway, I wanted to move to something that I thought was more humane, more of a vegetarian source, more natural, I guess one could say. And my own doctor basically made me, you know, ask questions, went the whole thing about osteoporosis and all that, and made me, you know, I allowed him to make me feel rather inept, uninformed, and so on, and he didn't want to make any change necessarily, and I didn't press the issue, but when I chose changed doctors, then he came back and was willing to change.
Good. So he was, yeah. You took it outside the realm of what we'd call mainstream medicine.
Right.
And mainstream medicine is largely a Western civilization, a history of culture and science and Western civilization. You took your concern for health and you brought your own power into your particular medical need in an alternative way, maybe outside the mainstream.
You also brought expertise that he probably didn't have, which is one of the problems that physicians have with natural medicine, is that because they don't have the training, they don't have the expertise, and even if the patient is very well informed and has thought through their decisions to try natural methods, instead, that expertise has a hard time getting honored by physicians who are trained in a different model.
And
some can do it, but.
And most health plans don't cover naturopathic medicine.
Right, which is another whole issue.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's a great example of that. There are power issues and even the model of healing that's being used.
Fortunately, in the HMO that I had, I could switch to another doctor who had right from the description of her focus that she was into alternative medicine, that type of thing. So I could switch without losing at least my insurance coverage and so on. But it was interesting how he came back and then did suggest basically what I was trying to suggest. But I said, forget it.
And how did it work out? I'm interested in that. Have you been on the natural therapy for some time?
I'm trying to get off it entirely.
Oh, you're trying to get off it?
Right, yeah. And I'm making progress.
Oh, you are?
Mm-hmm. But like he said, it's not covered when you
my program was very unique because 8 years ago we put in a naturopathic coverage, severely restricted and severely criticized, because at the same time we refused to put in Christian Science. And we would not put in Christian Science practitioners, but yet we did put in naturopathic medicine. But as I said, very limited as far as what we would pay for and when and how. Mm-hmm. There's some things that, well, I'll go out on a limb. There are some things that are very easy to abuse and very easy to make a big hole in, and you can dump unlimited amounts of money down this hole and never see a result. Naturopathic is one. unfortunately, mental health is another. You can punt a lot of money into that hole with no result. Fertilization therapy is another one. A woman who wants to get pregnant can go and spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars with no result. One of the philosophies of insurance and medical providers, medical care providers, is that there needs to be evidence of eligibility, evidence of a problem, a procedure that can be done with a predicted outcome. If there is not this predicted outcome, then it's hard to pay for it. The other, you know, the procedure to be done needs to be a recognized procedure. At the same time that we offered naturopathic, we also were one of the very first to allow payment to Fred Hutchinson for cancer treatment. Even today, most plans will not pay if you go to Fred Hutchinson. It's a cancer research facility, and being research, there is not a predicted outcome. You don't know how many people go through will have success on that treatment. And until you know how many, and you can say, okay, well, if we spend this much money, we're going to get this kind of result. Until that happens, most insurance companies aren't going to pay anything.
What's ironic about that, though, is that we spend a huge amount of healthcare dollar the last 60 days alive doing things that people often don't want done.
Sure.
Ways they don't want it done.
Sure.
Which don't have the proven result is a delayed death. And so the arguments that have been made against funding mental health therapy, for instance, it could easily be made against a lot of that end-of-life care that is not even, not healing if the person is terminal and is not even palliative in any way that people often want. Just extremely costly and ultimately ineffective. And yet we spend those billions and billions and billions when we won't pay for
what could
mental health care that...
Or preventive care,
whatever.
Well, in the discussion so far, you brought out three sources of power. You see power, first of all, the physician, or the medical establishment there. You see power in the purse, and you've seen power in the patient or the consumer or the person. And now you're starting to talk a little bit about where things might be abuses of power, things that don't really bring a result. And let's look at that now in terms of your own experience. Where have you seen abuses of power in terms of healthcare compared to where you've seen it really have value? We want to try to find out what makes the difference there. Where have you seen abuses?
Compared to where we've seen exercise of power be effective?
The abuse of power. Where have you seen power abused in your own experience of healthcare? Not what you maybe read about her.
It's our own experience.
Yeah, something firsthand. Something firsthand. Have you seen
one that we've all seen and we've all experienced is unnecessary tests that are done to protect the hospital or to protect the doctor in the event of a lawsuit. A whole battery of blood tests when you're only looking for this, but you do everything else just in case. And again, the price, cost of treatment skyrockets because, well, you know, after all, I don't want that patient coming back and suing us. I think that's an abuse. If we were in a...
Yeah, your story about the repeating the blood test was an example of that. Maybe not an intentional abuse, but without the system working efficiently.
Together.
I had a friend who had a pacemaker inserted in her chest about 24 hours before she died, and she was in her 80s. That was an abuse. She didn't have to undergo that at all.
A pacemaker was inserted in an 80-year-old?
She was an 84, I think.
84-year-old lady, and she died?
Died within 24 hours.
Would she have died anyway?
Oh, yes.
Somebody must have signed for that procedure.
Well, I'm sure, I'm sure her son did. Not, on the doctor's advice. I'm sure he didn't say, hey, I'd like a pacemaker and mom. But, so the doctor must have said, that's what she needs. And that's what
I think a lot of times those options get laid out for people. Like, we don't know. This is a risk. Here's what we could do. Mm-hmm. There's a possibility this would work. And you never know when you're talking to the loved one who's in crisis what actually was laid out. From that kind of a thing.
Think firsthand experience. Have you had an experience firsthand that seemed to be an abuse of power?
I think just the confusion in healthcare is an abuse of power. I mean, I work in healthcare. I'm an expert on insurance regulation, things like that, and I try to handle my own bills or my sister-in-law's bills. She has a severe mental health problem, and so her healthcare is very complicated. And just the confusion feels abusive to me because I realize, and I was recently on the phone to my healthcare provider's representative and my health plan trying to clear up some bills from a year and a half ago. And I said, it just appalls me if I can't get this figured out. How is somebody supposed to make this work for them? It's just, it's too difficult. And many people, what happens with my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, there are thousands and thousands of dollars that they pay out that they wouldn't get back unless, I was willing to spend hours and hours and hours helping them get it. So that's an abuse, and it's really a result of the fragmentation and the complexity, which is way beyond what people can handle.
I'll throw the ball back in your court. In your hospital, do you provide an itemized statement as they leave, or do you provide a summary of statement?
Summary.
That's an abuse. They gave me a summary. I said, do you want to get paid? Give me an itemized statement. We don't give itemized statement. I said, then you won't get paid. Well, of course we will. I said, I will ensure that you don't. You either give me an itemized statement. And in that itemized statement, I found that they were billing me for two rooms for one day. I said, you can't bill me for two rooms for one day. You can bill me for the most expensive room for one day, but because I moved from one room to another room with different rates, I said, you can't bill both of them for the same day. Yeah. It took a month for them to get that straightened out.
Was that all?
Yep, that was all. I knew who to call. But when a hospital does not allow the patient to see what it is they're paying for, and it's ultimately the patient that's paying, even though there's a third party administration somewhere along the line that's paying for it, the ultimate person that pays is the patient, either with their current pricing or because of increased pricing. But why do you only give a summary?
Because most hospitals, the one I work for, and most are unable to detail out the cost.
They're punching F1 instead of F3 on the computer.
No. Most hospitals have very primitive cost accounting systems, and they don't know themselves what the cost is.
Then how can you bill me for it if you don't know?
Because the history of billing has been a gradual increase by percentage year after year, not by cost.
Are you necessarily asking for cost based?
No,
you're just asking for
what am I being billed for?
The Kleenex, the
if I'm billing being billed for a Kleenex, I want to know it. If I'm being billed for 14 bedpans, I want to know it. If I'm being billed for IV therapy and I didn't have an IV put in, wait a minute. I didn't have IV therapy on that day.
Now let's go, wait a minute, let's go a little bit further. If, do you have an example of a personal experience that where you felt was an abuse of power, something personal to you that you saw in terms of healthcare? An abuse of power. Did something happen in your experience, your direct experience, that seemed abusive to you by someone in healthcare? Not of this group. Now, if we had a larger, will you have one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've been sitting here. I'm on the other side. I'm a physician. And so I appreciate the comments that I'm hearing tonight. I'm a family doc in Minnesota. Had a situation in my practice where a colleague of mine got interested in natural medicine and got interested in a Rexall product, which Rexall is now promoting a product line. And they are marketing that product line like Amway, where you become a distributor of that product. And he had actually contacted some patients about, you know, maybe you should try this product line. I think it might work for you. And to me, that was a abuse of power. It was a kind of a conflict of interest. His argument was that I think that it would, even though there was a financial, maybe he had a financial stake in it, I think his argument was that if I think it's going to do something right for somebody, how can I not morally kind of recommend it to somebody?
And that's the other side of it.
So, you know, that's one example. The other example that I felt is that I'm in a practice of about 20 docs. Medicine is becoming more corporate. There are much more large organizations, even the hospital who has bought up practices in the community. And in our community, the hospital pretty much has brought the specialty docs under their umbrella. And the hospital wields a lot of power in our community. And in subtle ways, they abuse that power in terms of their ability to maybe purchase land, ability to do other things that make it tough to compete, you know, with them too. So these are two ideas that, you know, recent experiences that I
have. Oh, good, good. Well, let me suggest where I'm going with this and see how you react. I would suggest that in terms of need and power, these are extremely powerful factors in healthcare today that work for the most part for the benefit of all concerned. The people who work in healthcare have a personal belief and feel that their work is important, that they're doing something to help another person, and they have the skill to do it. Like that surgeon who knew what needed to be done and knew that you didn't know how to do it. And he got the job taken care of there, and here you are 46 years later, still with us. And so that the those who work in healthcare on a one-to-one basis tend to do what they can to help other people. We tend to use that need power in a relationship in a positive way. And yet Americans today are very unhappy about healthcare in America. We say healthcare, the broad system of healthcare. And yet we say we love our doctors, we trust in our physicians, you know, we have a good a good nurse took care of me, or because of this particular procedure I am alive, or I have a child who's healthy, or, you know, and there's two things that's we're somewhat contradictory in this area. And I just through the week have been trying to bring back, okay, what are the values that drive American healthcare? Is it fear, power, and money? Or is it something else? Fear, power, and money, we see those every day. You know, the power of the purse, the power of the technology, you know, the reason, the head of medicine, the reason, but is that the heart of medicine? So when we get to the heart of medicine, what really drives, you know, our own personal experiences in healthcare? And And I'd suggest that in most situations, now if the room got more crowded, we had more people here, someone would say, oh, well, I had a definite experience where someone was abusive in power to me because of their position. You know, a therapist who took advantage of me sexually, for example. That's happened, right? Yeah, or a physician who directed to his own clinic, outpatient surgery clinic that he owned a portion of, or a hospital that used its tax-exempt property status to build a retirement community for senior citizens, knowing that its cost of doing business would be that percentage smaller than a for-profit chain. But the individuals making those decisions rarely see themselves doing something abusive in power. And I would just come back to, you know, as our healing mission, that those who work in healthcare are we're concerned with healing, but the fundamental purpose of our work is healing, whether it's healing ourselves or healing a patient or the healing of a sister-in-law. That's especially as we sit in whole, and that's God-driven. I mean, who is the healer? And then my encouragement is that all of us take out of Holden, you know, we fill our cups here and we go out, that we take that out with us, and that in that day-to-day encounter in healthcare, wherever ours may occur, that we bring that healing mission in there intentionally, and not let the other things get the attention as they can so easily. And I don't mean to preach about it. I just think this is where we've come from. This is our foundation, and it's the one true value, the true values that come through all of healthcare are Christian. You could say Judeo-Christian. You could say Western culture and civilization. But you know where that's come from is a humanistic concern for each other that pretty often is helpful. Now you react to that. Am I missing? Talking about the stuff on the edges that happens once in a while, or is it maybe more frequently than that?
I definitely think most people who work in healthcare are motivated by being helpful to other people.
They have to be.
And are very frustrated when there are things that get in their way. And actually what one of the things that's fueling the whole quality movement in healthcare, despite the fact that we, compared to a lot of other industries, are far later, less developed around measuring our performance or being able to communicate about what is quality or helping people assess that. One of the main things it's doing is giving people some hope in organizations that what they're doing is about delivering healthcare in a quality way to people, because there's a lot of frustration and pressure and a sense that they're losing that. It goes beyond just some of the culture changes of physicians going from small practices to larger practices, or going from solo positions to salaried employee positions. Those things affect you at one level, and there are some who have had a harder time with those kinds of changes. But the thing that really affects people is when they really feel like they can't do a good job. They're not providing good patient care, or an institution feels like it's fighting an uphill battle to try to keep a small institution alive and providing good care that's needed in the community. When reimbursement goes down and the cost of operating is going up, and so on and so forth. So I just think there's an awful lot of frustration now, and a sense that the industry doesn't, the field doesn't know how to heal itself.
Yeah.
A lot of people willing, but a lot of confusion and a lot of frustration about how to do that.
Yeah.
I'd very much like to hear a little bit more about what you alluded to a moment ago when you said that the hospitals were purchasing some of your colleagues' practices and bringing them into an umbrella within the healthcare network associated with a single hospital. How does that affect you as a private practitioner? how does it affect the health care of the community? What is it going to do to the costs of health care?
I think I'm fortunate because I practice in a community where good medicine is practiced. I mean, I'm very fortunate that I have colleagues in other practices that I can refer patients. I think the philosophy of the hospital is that they would like to have their vision for the whole community, their healthcare vision be the only vision, because they will have then more control over that vision getting accomplished. And I am concerned that not only in our community but other communities, if that happens a lot, that just as you know, you may sign up with an insurance plan, but the insurance plan may say, I'm sorry, but your doctors are no longer in the group that we want to contract with because this other big group will contract with us at a better rate, so you're going to have to pick it up from somebody else. So I see a lot of patients who have to shift when they don't want to shift. They have to move practice, you know, move from physicians because of the cost of medicine, and a choice that's made not by them, not by a physician, by an insurance company, so that more of that happens. I agree with you. I think what I value most, what's most important to me, is the encounters I have with people every day. That's, you know, if I didn't have that kind of, those individual encounters and come away with that feeling like I was there, they were helping me and I was helping them, I probably wouldn't be in medicine. And my role, I think, is to empower people. They have a need and I try to empower them to kind of be healthier. But that, even that relationship, it gets kind of disrupted. There are other influences on it. It's tough, like, you know, you're trying to have a relationship with a patient and, well, that's not covered, or you can't go there, or I have to get this authorized, or, I don't have time to kind of answer all your questions about alternative medicine. I've got a full schedule, and you know more about that than me, but I don't know. Let's try it out and see what happens. So there are a lot of other pressures on the other, on the healthcare deliverer side, too, but that is the trend. That is what's happening. I think what happens is as the group gets bigger, it's a little tougher to kind of get back to that simple vision of really what you want is that individual good encounter. There are other things that bigger groups look at that are just as important, and I think that almost take a little more precedent over that, you know, patient encounter sometimes. Not that they would admit it, not that they think that, but they will say that our philosophy is to have excellent patient care and want every patient encounter to be excellent, but it becomes one of many values that larger corporations have.
The person that if you're in that position, that you're obligated to refer to other physicians that are in that program is one of the tenets of that philosophy or that view the hospital is having. And when that occurs, the reference or the referral is made not based on, is this the best doc for that procedure, or is this the matching of the personalities or anything else. The referral is made, well, he happens to be or she happens to be employed by MultiCare, so since I'm a MultiCare doc, I have to refer to another MultiCare doc, and this is the only one we have that deals with this problem. I went to my doc recently, and he wanted a blood test. Okay, fine, I go down to Smith Kline. Oh no, we're now using MultiCare. I said, well, I don't like the lab there. I'll go to Smith Kline. And smaller lab, more personal. When you walk in, they welcome you. The hospital. hospital lab, gee, we're too busy, sit in the corner for 20 minutes and we'll get to you when we have a chance. That's my relationship with the two labs. So as long as I have the power and I'm paying the bill, I'll go where I want to go. Even though the doctor wanted me to go to the other one. But for no other reason than it was part of his new group.
How do you know you didn't have any other reason? Maybe you had more confidence in the lab.
The lab was the lab, I think.
Obviously not, because you wouldn't know. You went to the other one.
How they treat you, you know.
I think there are some times when those attempts to build integrated delivery systems where everybody's in one organization and you have sort of agreed upon goals and agreed upon ways to operate and so forth. Sometimes that can mean that the physician, that the specialist that you're referring to is somebody that you do know and you have regular relationship with them and you have an opportunity to get together with them to talk about, you know, case conferences or some way to resolve problems and to improve care. If it's just channeling, if it's just these five are on the list and these 10 aren't, it's all that was. I just think the way that we have healthcare organized right now is a very crude way of trying to reorganize and deal with the fragmentation of healthcare. We're going to
get
more sophisticated. Well, it's
not crude in the sense of looking through history. It is maybe the most complex of any healthcare system in any nation and at any time in history. American healthcare.
But we've added these mechanisms. We try to meet so many different goals. We try to give people lots of choice. We try to give the employer the best price. There are all these goals that are trying to be met, and the result is you get all of these mixed models, and that a delivery system is trying to, where basically everybody works for the same organization. Or one that's completely full of independence or cottage industry approach has at least some common organizing principles. One part of what's happening in healthcare today is there are not common organizing principles. And in one physician's practice, lots of times they're doing 20% HMO business, 50% commercial business, and the rest is government business.
Massive people are going this way, another one handle the same thing this way.
From visit to visit under a whole different set of rules where you can't operate.
So what are the guiding values to take into those complex situations on a day-to-day basis for those who work in healthcare as well as those who enter it on occasion when need demands or family situation requires their participation? That's where we're running out of time here, but that's where in the spirit of Holden, that I'd suggest is our best guide in those day-to-day encounters is the Christian values of Christ as healer and our own human form divine, that those one-on-one individual situations give occasion to exercise something along the lines of those values we have inside of us and to turn to those first, turn to those situations through matters of the heart first, rather than let the fear, power, money drive our decisions. And we're pressured certainly by many factors. Those are all, those are coming at us, people are coming at us from those forces of fear, power, and money. But to have the presence of mind to look and say, this is a matter of the heart here, let's solve it from that first. Even though we're all going to run into these conflicts, especially when we work in healthcare, it's intense, isn't it? It's intense.
And what you referred to as far as a real tension, care providers feeling that they are short-staffed and in the nursing area, assistive personnel being introduced in the name of hospital reengineering and so on. I'm the result of early retirement that was offered, and for me it was a great deal, and so on. But because they were cutting staff, and so they were calling it patient-focused care, that the name was.
The goal
Nate, all the people laid off, you're real good.
Yeah. You're not a part of our excellence plan.
Well, we're going to cut this formally right now, but I'd encourage you to continue thinking along these ways. Maybe we can talk here or coffee or other places about your own personal experience.